I'm Matthew Petty, and this is Intersection. The government has been shut down for a week as lawmakers in Washington continue to wrangle over the Affordable Health Care Act and whether or not to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government running. Meanwhile, the debt ceiling deadline is fast approaching. I'll speak with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry about the shutdown and the outlook for the country in the wake of this crisis. Also, Ali Braswell is the president of the Central Florida Urban League. Later in the program, he discusses what the league is doing to promote social and economic equality, and he talks about his recent bid for state office. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined by 90.7 political commentators Lou Fry and Dick Batchelor. Lou Fry, a former Republican congressman, he's the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida. I'm also joined by Dick Batchelor, a former Democratic State House representative. He's the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. The federal government's been partially shut down for a week now after lawmakers failed to pass appropriations legislation for the upcoming fiscal year, which began October 1st, and congressional Republicans will not pass a clean continuing resolution unless there are more cuts to the Affordable Care Act. Who's to blame for this?
I look at them and they remind me of little kids who, you know, you pound your chest, I'm bigger than you are, and don't play in my sandbox. And we have three different sides doing this. Actually, it's easier to solve the debt problem politically than it is the question of October 1st, because there's a lot more things on the table you can deal with. You can deal with tax cuts. You can deal with programs that you're locking in terms of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. You'll have a lot of things that you can give away if you want to negotiate. The thing I think that frustrates me is everybody's got their thing. You do it this way or else. That isn't negotiation. That isn't why you're sent up there. You're sent up there to come under tough circumstances to a deal. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need. We need a deal by the 17th of this month.
But I guess, Dick Batchelor, the point that perhaps the president is making is that this is not up for negotiation if you're talking about the Affordable Care Act, because it's already law. It's not something which should be batted back and forth at this point.
Well, the president has said he would negotiate after they saw the debt's limit, the debt ceiling limit issue. He would negotiate at that time. And it actually sent some signals he would be receptive to having some conversations about Affordable Care Act. The problem here, and I think Lou alluded to it, is that, first of all, the new buzzword must be the word conversation, because Speaker Boehner on national TV used the term conversation 24 times in one interview, so it must be a focus group word. But here's the problem. It's more than one issue on the table. You got debt limit, and you got sequestration. No one's talking about it. You've got the government shutdown, and you do have some adjustments to the entitlements and are no taxes. So it really is complicated. And I think what further complicates the final note is that a lot of the players who really don't want to see anything happen are taking the lead, like Ted Cruz. I don't think he really wants to see anything happen, but you've got the Tea Party wagging the dog, which is the Republican Party, and Boehner cannot get, and he said this weekend, I cannot get a vote up and down on the budget.
Mm-hmm. The Tea Party, Ted Cruz, the likes of people like him, do you think, what's his end game in this?
It's about three parties, Ted Cruz, and Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. He's out there on the front. He thinks he can be a candidate for president in 2016. But the funny thing about him is, there's an old saying, don't burn bridges unless you can walk on water. He must think he can walk on water because he's burning every bridge out there, including bridges with his own Republican leadership. I mean,
yeah, the Republican Party, and I think a member of Congress has to step back and look at what's going on and say, look, did I take an oath to my party or did I take an oath to the Constitution? And we're basically in a constitutional crisis on this. And if we step up to what we're going to do, it's going to work out. If everybody plays, you know, I'm king of the mountain and you aren't, then it isn't going to go. People like Ted Cruz come along in politics and they're there. They shoot up like a rocket and then they shoot down like a rocket. They don't have long staying power usually. I am delighted to hear them talk about the debt ceiling, that's the thing that I think has more movement in it. It has more ability to come to a compromise on it. And I keep hoping, because I was in the leadership of Congress and everything isn't on the table, I keep hoping that while they're saying these things to each other, They're working in the back room trying to come up with something.
Right.
They can't be that dumb that they don't know what the debt ceiling violation is going to do. It's what it's going to do to the stock market. I had a 401k at one point, went down to a 101k, and it started to turn a little bit. And I thought, gee, you know, it's going to the foreign market, Dick, is going to be bad. You look at the things. What are the Chinese going to buy or not buy?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you look at it, plus where the dollar is a denomination that is the currency for the world is based on, and we cannot risk that. Fortunately, to his credit, Speaker Boehner has said he will not, you know, default on our debt and our credit. So I think that's a good sign. I'm hoping that Lou alluded to that you've got some people behind closed doors taking a deep breath saying, okay, everybody's got to walk away with something. It might be short of emblematic.
Amen. Say that again, Dick.
Somebody has to walk away with something. But here's, again, poor Boehner is in a situation, though. What he might agree is something the Tea Party might not agree. And at some point in time, the Republicans who are not Tea Partiers are going to have to come together and get just enough folks behind Peter King, Congressman Peter King, and others to pass some kind of compromise. It will never be enough for the Tea Partiers, but Boehner's got to get those votes to get something done if he can walk away with some kind of win.
They call it up in Washington, and not out loud, they call it sometimes a suicide caucus.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they're, you know, it's my way or the highway.
But some of those Republicans you mentioned, the moderate Republicans, they have been saying openly they do want to get something done.
Right.
So there's obviously the will there.
But politically, here's the problem with Speaker Boehner again. He said that he does not have the votes to pass continuing resolution without some other deal, a side deal. But the challenge is, again, put it up for a vote. It just takes a few minutes to put it up for a vote, and the votes might be there because you've got Peter King and others. There's about 20-some who've said off the record they would tend to support it. But the problem is the Tea Party is not going to. But you could. I mean, you could go ahead and put it to a test. Speaker Boehner, let them vote. Mm-hmm. Let them vote and see if the votes are there for continuing resolution to take the pressure off at this point in time.
Well, Lou Fry, you made the comment just now about what's going to happen if the debt ceiling isn't raised, but a lot of those lawmakers who are in that Tea Party group, they were elected because they said, look, we've got to do something about the U.S. government spending, and maybe this is the point.
That's a good thing. I think we should do something about government spending.
Sure,
I think
right.
The defense budget, for instance, got, you know, 5-10% of the defense budget, whatever. I think there's things you can do. So
sure.
I don't think the idea of having government. Look, I tried to introduce a balanced resolution in the Congress, a balanced budget resolution in the Congress when I was there at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
We figured that debt was starting to go. It wasn't really bad yet, but we thought, boy, maybe we ought to lock it in like Florida does. So, you know, and they gave us awards for the idea and all that kind of thing, but we couldn't ever get it passed.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get a constitutional amendment passed, which is what you needed. So the idea isn't bad, but the implementation is what really makes you nervous, mm-hmm. and also the unwillingness to talk about it.
Well, let me ask you, too, about what Florida lawmakers are doing. If you compare and contrast maybe Senator Marco Rubio, I mean, he spoke with Ted Cruz on the Senate floor at the start of the situation, but he's been relatively quiet since then.
Smart.
What's he doing in this, and what's his strategy?
I think the strategy, which is pretty apparent, is Marco's taken a deep breath and moved back a little bit, and he's let somebody else handle this problem along with immigration, and he's taken on a couple that he thinks are he's very much involved with, but he feels, I think, a lot more comfortable with. Marco's got a long time to go,
mm-hmm.
you know, still over 4 years till his election. I think he's done a good job in the Senate. He's really a good guy. I hope he continues to grow and his influence continues to spread.
Mm-hmm. Dick Batchelor, do you see signs of people in Congress from Florida anyway crossing the aisle and being willing to negotiate on not just the Affordable Care Act, but also maybe down the track the debt ceiling?
I think so. I mean, that's being overly optimistic maybe, but four Republicans in Florida, the delegation, have already said that they are not going to play this game. They do not want to see the debt ceiling not addressed. I think, I'm going to go back to Marco Rubio, bright guy, former Speaker of the House. Time magazine had him on the cover as the savior of the Republican Party, took the lead on immigration along with the seven other U.S. senators. That didn't go any place. Then he got the Tea Party just really raked him over the coals. So now he's talking about abortion issues, did play a major cameo role, I suppose, on the Ted Cruz debate on the floor of the Senate. But the problem with the shooting star is they burn out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure he's burned out or not. Can he make a comeback? But he's going to have to make a comeback because he's back down. And if you look at all the polls now, Hillary Clinton beats Ted Cruz by 30-some points. She beats Marco Rubio. She beats Jeb Bush. But I mean, where are the Jeb Bushes of the world who tend to be like philosophically moderate now and trying to the sanity in the party or Christie and people like that? Can they make a run for it? This will okay. It's a good news, bad news, and this is a story of the day. But if it can get beyond some kind of resolution, the story changes, and they can come back. But Marco Rubio is really going to have to rebuild his credibility in the Republican Party now.
Lou Fry, what situation do you think we're going to be in 3 months down the track?
Well, obviously, we're either going to be in a good situation if we've got the debt squared away and we're working on a lot of these other problems, including our foreign policies like Syria and all that. If we're not, in 3 months, our country's going to be in an economic problem. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be, you know, people are going to be longing for the day when they had a 101K. Mm-hmm. And the foreign markets are going to be there.
Absolutely.
The employment is going to be hurt. The new jobs are going to be hurt. It is not going to be a very pretty scene. And it's self-inflicted wound. We can stop this tomorrow. All the president has to do is say, look, I'm willing to negotiate after. And the Republicans say, okay, we don't like that. But, you know, we'll talk about these. If you talk about these three or four things, and it won't be Obamacare, it'll be three or other four things you can live with. You know, let's put this together and go. And then, you know, he, I'm sure, would like to leave a legacy. Sure. The legacy he's leaving now is just a bloody mess. Mm. And so he's got a lot in it from that standpoint. Not reelection, but in essence, what every president wants to do is leave a legacy, have a library about all the great job he did, all the things he did. I'm all for it. You know, I hope he does, comes out of this and does a great job. But we got to get through this next step, which is really a critical step, the debt. Mm-hmm.
Dick Batchelor, 3 months down the track, where do you see this country headed?
Well, I'm holding out some hope because the debt limit is such a critical issue. It's not only our markets. I mean, we could see our stock market drop by 700 points over several days, too.
That's a day.
It could be devastating. International monetary markets and fiscal policy would be affected, too. So I'm hoping that Speaker Boehner would stay true to his word, that he will not allow that to happen, and we can find some kind of resolution. We've got to find a resolution.
And I second the motion of the gentleman from Florida. It's a great idea. Why don't we pile on it? That's all you have to do. I mean, that's it, and the whole thing changes.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope they're listening to Intersection.
Okay.
Lou Fry, very nice speaking to you. Lou Fry, of course, is a former Republican congressman. He's the founder of the Lou Fry Institute for Politics and Government at the University of Central Florida, and he's also an attorney at Lowndes, Drostick, Doster, Cantor, and Reed. And, of course, Dick Batchelor, former Democratic State House representative and the founder and president of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Thank you both for coming in. Up next, a conversation with the Central Florida Urban League president, Ali Braswell. I'm joined in the studio by Ali Braswell. Ali served in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was an executive at Disney, and now he serves as the president of the Central Florida Urban League. Ali, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So I want to start by talking to you about your work with the Central Florida Urban League. Now, you've held the position of president for 3 years now?
Yes.
What was your original vision for the league when you became president?
Well, when I came in, the league was going through a rebuild. It had had a lack of leadership for about 18 months. So the goal was to stabilize the Urban League, and it would take us anywhere from 3.5 to 5 years to do that. But I walked in with a 100-day plan that allowed us to take a look at the brand and look at the reputation management. Also look at whether or not our programs were relevant with our community and help us redefine ourselves. Part of that effort was we moved from being the Metropolitan Orlando Urban League to the Central Florida Urban League. Mm-hmm. We moved our mission statement to better reflect the mosaic of Central Florida by saying that we serve, and we truly do, all Central Floridians in helping them achieve and overcome obstacles to economic success and social success. So in looking back 3 years ago, we are well along the path, but it's a continuing journey. Mm-hmm. We've regained our corporate support and our community, and we've been able to help a lot of families. On average, we're helping anywhere from 400 to 600 families a year in our economic services programs, which is helping them keep their houses. We've been a part of the Florida's Hardest Hit Funds program, helping people get access to resources to be able to retain their homes. You know, that's an excellent way of preventing homelessness, is let's keep you in the house that you're in.
Is that the core mission of the Urban League, to really make sure that people do have a solid foundation in Central Florida?
Yes, it is. In its 35th year, this Urban League affiliate, like the other 97 in the country, focuses on economics, And we also focus on economic growth in terms of business development. But we also have two other areas of focus. One is around youth. We annually serve over 2,000 youth through our programs where we're in schools doing tutoring and coaching and providing workshops to help kids stay in school. And the other area of focus is workforce development, and where we're being able to reach out to communities, 18 to 24-year-olds are really having a tough time finding jobs and training. So we're working with our partners to be able to help them go to work if they're new. Mm-hmm. And then for that next demographic, which is 25 to 55, we're helping them return to work by retooling themselves. So it's really been a great way of bringing all our core focuses together, which we call wraparound services, and helping families get that solid foundation.
So when you came onto the league as president, you were facing not only a crisis in leadership within the Central Florida Urban League, but also the depths of the recession, which is a tough time for, I think, you know, those 18 to 25, 26-year-olds you talk about. That's like the hardest area in terms of folks who are out of work, right?
Yes, it was. And one of the things was we had to come in and rebuild the confidence of people in the league. And we continue on that journey to do that because we need core partners from the corporate places to be able to put people to work. Mm-hmm. We need them to invest in the training, the pre-vocational training that helps people have the right attitudes and then map their aptitudes to the right types of jobs and then give them the ability to be successful when they get there and coach them through that. So it was a tough time, but, you know, you view the glass as half full because it was also an excellent time to help redefine relationships, to help us move people forward. It was great for the Urban League to be able to be there in terms of helping to sustain people and mm-hmm. provide that hope as we've done. I think one of the most moving cases was a young lady she and her mom had bought a home a few years ago. Her mom fell ill, and then she fell ill, and so they lost their incomes. That house was going to foreclosure and did go through foreclosure sale, but because of one of our counselors and her diligence, we were able to go to the state, go through that program, and be able to recover her home. And that's what the Urban League is about, and it doesn't matter what background you come from. If you hit an Urban League door in one of our three locations, we're going to take care of you.
Now, when you say part of your goal in rebuilding the league was to better reflect the mosaic of Central Florida, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is when the league was first formed, and we stayed true to that, of serving just African Americans in our mm-hmm. community. But, you know, as we've gone through the recession, not just African Americans were hit. So we need to better reflect the people who are in the neighborhoods we serve. And so we broaden our reach to be able to serve who is in Central Florida. And in doing so, we continue to see over 70% of the people who walk through my doors are from African heritage. Mm-hmm. But we've seen an increase. And you know what? People are looking for help. They're just looking for somebody to have a listening ear and then have a solution that can help them. And the Urban League has been able to do that. I'm reminded of a couple from Apopka who came in about a year and a half ago. And it was an older white couple from Apopka who said, you know, I never thought the Urban League was for me. But we helped them save their home in Apopka. And he says, you know what, I'm so thankful. And I think that's what we had to do is our demographic shift in Central Florida, we had to be prepared to handle the people here who need help. Mm-hmm. And while we're staying true to what our mission is, which is helping people move forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about helping young folks get them into jobs and careers, we had University of Central Florida Professor Dr. Pamela McCauley-Bush on the program just a few months ago, and she's working to get more women and minorities into the STEM field, that's careers within science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And she told us that that's an industry she feels is lacking in diversity. Now, one of your initiatives at the Urban League is to close the achievement gap for African heritage students. How are you going about doing this?
Well, it's interesting you should ask that because my background is I'm a computer scientist, information technology guy. And so a lot of people say, well, Ali, you're doing social services. So I'm high tech, high touch. And STEM is really important to me. The Urban League actually in January will be launching an after school program at one of our local high schools. We think we have that nailed down. But that program will be a collaboration between Boy Scouts of America and the Urban League in terms of forming an explorer post mm-hmm. that will be called the Urban League STEM Academy. And our goal is to work with 9th through 12th graders and helping them understand and lay a roadmap towards what's possible in science, technology, engineering, and math careers. Now, we're going to call our academy a little different. We're going to call it a STEAM Academy.
STEAM.
Because I think it should be about science, technology, engineering, arts, and math.
Right.
With a math background and an IT background, I'll tell you that it's kind of boring just doing math all day if you don't have some type of art form.
Mm-hmm.
And having worked at Disney, I can tell you, you got chemical engineers, mechanical engineers, civic engineers, to creative designers, show producers that come together to make that magic. And a lot of it is technology and science-based.
So what do you think that that women and minorities are underrepresented in the STEM field, or the STEAM field, as you like to call it?
I think because they don't see examples of themselves, and they don't know that that is an option in a lot of cases. And that's where I think when you start showing them the possibilities at early on, kids try to make that decision of what they want to do around fifth and sixth grade. So when we wait till it's ninth grade to introduce it to them, they're well on their way and have kind of decided what they want to do. So what we have to do is move down downstream and start to cultivate earlier, show them what, and expose them to things. Like one of the shows that is coming up here soon, the Urban League is going to be in partnership to show kids what modeling and simulation is all about around the health industry.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do there is bring in high schoolers, but we're also looking earlier on to eventually be able to bring in K through 8 students just to expose them and let them also see that there are engineers, there are mathematicians, there are professors in math that look just like them and help them move forward. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to also let young ladies know that it's okay to be super smart, mm-hmm. and that, you know, a technology career is something you can achieve. I have a friend who's a civil engineer, and I will tell you that Renee is incredible. She's a Florida State grad, and she's been a professional engineer for a number of years, but she didn't fit the mold of guy running around in a construction hat, but she's just as capable. And I think that's what we had to do, is give them examples that they can then emulate or place in their lives so they can see themselves being successful.
Looking at Central Florida, if you look out to the Space Coast, I mean, you've got a great example in the administrator of NASA. Charles Bolden was an astronaut. He piloted two shuttle missions and he was commander of a third mission. You can't get a better role model than that. Do you feel like having NASA in Central Florida's backyard gives us a leg up in terms of providing those good examples for young students of color?
I think so, because the key is, though, we have to educate them and let them know that NASA's more than just a commercial on television.
Mm-hmm.
We have to educate them on the astronauts who have served, like Charles Bolden, who, by the way, is a Marine, just saying. The other opportunities we have over at some of the local universities is another astronaut who serves at FIT.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do is expose kids to this. And so I think what we need is support to help get the message to them early on, so they can see themselves and then also make career choices. And we also have to not dumb down science, technology, engineering, and math. And what I mean by that is not make it interesting. Because a lot of times when kids see these jobs, they're like, well, I can't do that. That's too hard. It's not something that I can achieve. Yes, you can. And we can lay a roadmap for you, a track to help you get there. And I think that's where the Urban League, working in conjunction with our schools, working in conjunction with industry, can provide avenues for kids to see real opportunities. And truly, if we're going to become Central Florida that has the creative village, and mm-hmm. we're going to have in Lake Mary the high-tech knowledge corridor, we're going to need to make sure that all kids have an opportunity to compete for those jobs and be better equipped. And I think we start doing that back in the elementary schools.
Mm-hmm. Just back to Central Florida, I guess kind of politics in a way. I mean, we were in the national spotlight over the last 18 months during the trial of George Zimmerman and the aftermath of the shooting death of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. And you appeared at a Justice for Trayvon rally, I believe, in March 2012. Was that right?
Yes.
And I'm just quoting here from a newspaper article. You said, this case has led the community to confront racism as a real and prevalent problem. Do you think anything's changed in the last 18 months? I mean, has this case really helped Central Florida confront that issue?
I think we began a dialogue at that point. I would point back to it. I had an opportunity to serve on a panel with the mayor of Sanford, with the mayor of Cocoa, with leaders from the Asian and Hispanic community, as well as the Jewish community. And we began to really talk about how we could come together. And I think an example that is a step forward would be Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in light of the decision, many people, including myself, while we did not like the decision, we respected it. But I think when you look at Samford, the dialogues that are happening with the clergy, the dialogues that are happening with the police department now in the community, you begin to move forward. Do I think we vastly improved it? No. I think we're on a path to beginning to have real conversations around it. But here's what's interesting to me. When I speak with my 17 and 22-year-old, they give me great hope because they're not even thinking that that really exists. But what I have to remind them is there are certain people who are still stuck in some of the past ways of thinking. And you have to continue to be open-minded. And we have to continue to talk and dialogue and make friends of all backgrounds. A friend shouldn't be driven by their economic standing nor their ethnic heritage. They should be driven by their closeness to you. You know, what the Urban League's role was, how do we come together? How do we support that this is a travesty no matter the color of the skin of the individual? Okay, and we can't allow implicit biases to dictate how we treat each other. Everyone has it, but we can all work towards how to overcome it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's through that type of dialogue is when we move ourselves forward.
You have also obviously had some political aspirations. Do you feel like politics in Central Florida is kind of weighed down in cynicism?
I would say yes, but my goal right now is to continue to lead the Urban League, continue to move forward, and chase my passions, my passion being giving back to community. My passion is helping our elected officials understand the challenges that people face. My thing is to continue to move people forward. Yeah.
So thinking back to August, you announced your bid for Florida Chief Financial Officer and then just 4 days later bowed out after those media reports came out about bankruptcies in your past. How did that process of deciding to run come about? I mean, how long were you planning it for?
Well, I had given it great thought over a number of years, and the goal was I wanted to be there to represent people who needed a voice and who wanted to be heard. And I found out that I already had that platform in being the leader of the Urban League. And what's important to me, as I said in my statement, is I will do that because I want to put my family first and I want to take care of my family and leverage the ability to help people. As the reports about that, you know, the reports I didn't deny, those are things I overcame. Those were challenges in my life, and that's why I continue to fight each and every day for everyone.
Were you disappointed with the way that played out, though? I mean, did you feel like you'd been unfairly treated by the media or that you were kind of painted into a corner a little bit?
I think I clearly stated how I felt in that final statement.
Do you still have some aspirations politically? I mean, is that it for you? Do you think there are other political offices you might seek?
You know, you never say never, but I can tell you on my bucket list, that box is permanently checked.
Right. How long do you think you're going to be in the position of president of the Central Florida Urban League? Do you have a kind of a long-term plan, or are you just going to take it as it comes?
I think we'll go along with that. I'll continue to serve at the pleasure of the board, which reconfirmed unanimously that I'm the right person to do this at this juncture. I think I'll take the words from an incredible leader from the NAACP, Mr. Benjamin Jealous. A leader knows when to stand up, and a leader knows when to step down. And at that point in time, I know that I'll receive wise counsel. But as long as I'm there, we'll continue to move the Urban League forward.
I've been speaking to Ali Braswell. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps. He was an executive at Disney, and he now serves as the president of the Central Florida Urban League. He's just come out with a new book, Rekindling the Passion, Restoring the Joy and Purpose to Your Life. Ali Braswell, thank you very much for coming in.
Matthew, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.